Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Dr. Irene Carter from the University of Windsor, will be giving us an update on her work. So tell me a little bit about your latest work in the arena of disabilities.
Well, currently I've been a reviewer for master level and PhD level thesis. That's taken up quite a bit of my time. And I'm also reviewing a book on how to advocate for teaching social workers how to advocate for people with disabilities. And I'm hoping to finish this month. And I have been working on, I am presenting on disability at the Social Work, Social Development World Conference in Dublin from July 3rd to 7th, or 2nd to 7th. And I will be presenting my work on disability there from different perspectives. One in particular is comparing disability in the countries of, in schools of social work in the countries of Canada, the U.S., the British Isles, and Australia.
So, in terms of the services available through social work, what are some of the key differences in these countries?
Well, I would say that they're somewhat similar. They're all Western countries, but I think that probably Canada looks very good, especially here in Ontario, compared to, with respect to their approach to disability. We have endorsed a social model of disability here in Ontario and the rest of the country, but particularly in Ontario, we have our Ontario Disabilities Act, which is creating a pathway to introducing services and greater accessibility for persons with disabilities. The U.S. also has a program. But what we found in the U.S. that they were more of a, in accordance with the Disability Act, the American Disabilities Act, more in accordance with a medical model. And you have a problem, and we'll try to fix it, but not so much ongoing accessibility for people who have disabilities that cannot be altered. The British Isles I found similar to Canada, and Australia is catching up. But I'd say with respect to disability, Canada is in many ways leading the way, and not that we don't have a lot to do as yet. And of course, my particular focus has been on the education of social workers within disability
to work with persons with disabilities.
So, how do you respond to things like the criticism concerning the delays in the AODA implementation, that the accessibility upgrades aren't happening as they should or fast enough?
I think that's a concern. It's very much a concern, and that we should be doing more in that area. I also, and things should be proceeding faster than they are. And we should be at a more advanced stage if we want to meet the objective, such as by the year 2025, we will have accessibility as commonplace in our society. We're not there. There's many things that need to be improved, and of course my focus is on education, improving accessibility for students in school as well as post-secondary schools. And I certainly would like to see more research in this area, and particularly research by persons with disabilities.
So, do you see any strides being made in the right direction in this way?
I see through the media, and this is my own particular observation, that I think we are more accepting of persons with disabilities. And well, one could suggest that we will all be there eventually if we're not there now. So a kinder, more accepting approach towards persons with disabilities, this has been done through different activities such as obtaining jobs for people with disabilities or encouraging work opportunities for people with disabilities and in sports activities. And as well, I can see some of it developing in schools where we have better accessibility programs for students in post-secondary schools and post-secondary education.
So if you could send any message to the community about why this should be a priority, what would you say?
Well, I would suggest that we need to implement more social programming that originates from the voices of people with disabilities and listen more intently to the research that they are developing. And I'm quite encouraged by the amount of research that is being done by persons with disabilities at the university level and the PhD level. And I think that we need to listen to what they are saying and implement our social programs accordingly. To make assumptions that we know what it is to have a disability and how that disability can be accommodated to make things more accessible to persons with disabilities is something that we're not equipped to do as well as persons with disabilities. So I'm encouraged by that, and I would like to see more of that happening. I would like to see people with disabilities have a greater voice and the decision-making about what social programs we should be encouraging.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Rachel Marks from Autism Ontario. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with Autism Ontario.
So last night in Toronto, we hosted a historical event, actually. It was the Autism Supports Discussion that we partnered with the Ontario Autism Coalition to present. It was the first time that members of the four major parties here in Ontario came together to discuss autism and what their party would do for people with autism or tackle issues facing people with autism if elected.
So, what are some of the most common issues surrounding autism?
Well, the number one issue that we hear from parents constantly that we always get reports about is schooling, just being able to access ABA programming in publicly funded schools. Currently, there are over 20,000 students diagnosed with ASD in the publicly funded school system in Ontario, and they're just not getting access to the support they need.
So, how do you go about spreading the word about the work you do?
Well, I think events like this are a really great opportunity to do that. It gives people a chance to see sort of what the issues are, the public as well as families that either are on the spectrum or have someone on the spectrum in the family. We also have an excellent marketing team and a really great magazine that comes out called Autism Matters with stories about our families and by families.
So, what are some of the challenges in debunking the myths surrounding autism?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think one of the current big myths that we're seeing arise in again is the vaccination, people saying that vaccinations cause autism. And as you know, that is scientifically been proven not to be the case. So that's something that we see as sort of a rise in every now and then, and is a myth that needs to be debunked. Other myths that need to be debunked that we were talking about last night, obviously a big one is employment. Are people on the spectrum employable? And the answer is yes. Yes, they are, with the proper support in the employment system and by the employer, you could have a really fantastic employee on your hands. So that's a big myth that we want to sort of, you know, get rid of. Our people on the spectrum are, you know, in a great employee, and currently of the adults with developmental disabilities, 58% of those rely on the Ontario Disability Income Supports as their primary source of income. And that's because they're just not getting the training they're needed or the support they need in the workplace.
So what would you say to an employer to challenge these precepts?
I think that diversifying the workplace by employing people on the spectrum is an opportunity for businesses to invest in the creation of accessible environments and for managers to develop their own abilities to support and develop a workforce filled with extreme potential.
So, in your time with Autism Ontario, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
You know what? There are many, to be honest. As the community events coordinator for the East and Southeast regions, and I also do up to Peterborough and Carter Lakes, I work with thousands of families across the province, and I always say I have the best job in the world because I'm at programming, I'm at events, and I'm seeing kids and young adults do something for the first time. For instance, we were in Brockville 2 years ago for the opening of the Aquatarium attraction there, and a mom came out with her 11-year-old son, and she had a little tear in her eye, and she said to me, "My son just said, that's awesome." And I was like, "That's great." She goes, "No, you don't understand. That's the first time he's ever said that." And I was just like, "Wow, that's amazing." So I get to have moments like that every day in my job, and it's wonderful.
So what do you foresee for the future of the work of Autism Ontario?
Honestly, I think that Autism Ontario will continue advocating for families on the spectrum, will continue advocating for better services, for more access, will continue providing educational opportunities for family, and of course, support for families and for people on the spectrum themselves.
So, for last night's meeting, what sort of response did you get from the political leaders in regards to these issues?
So the main issues that we talked about last night were education, as I spoke about, employment, housing, and also accessing to health care. I think you'll find that the audience was split on the response, as would be any audience in any political event, but quite honestly, just the fact that they were all there, that somebody from each of the four major parties was there, and they were willing to take the time and take the questions and sort of answer what, you know, the questions from the audience, I think that's a really big step forward. I think that this is the party saying, okay, we acknowledge that something needs to be done. Maybe they're not all there yet on knowing how to go about that, but they're willing to take the step, which is amazing.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yes, I will, for sure. Thank you.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Canadian Blood Services invites you to save a life today. Every 60 seconds, someone in Canada needs blood. Donating is simple, and your blood will go to help Canadians undergoing heart surgery, leukemia treatment, or those involved in an accident. Go online and book your appointment today at www.blood.ca or give us a call toll-free at 1-888-2-DONATE. That's 1-888-236-6283.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for special needs individuals in our community. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Dr. Irene Carter and Rachel Marks. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from personal trainer Stefania Ciula from the Windsor Squash and Fitness Club. She'll be telling us how she would design a program of training for individuals with disabilities. So tell me a little bit about some of the health factors that can be reduced as risks when you're physically in shape.
So there are a number of health risks that can be reduced with exercise and healthy diet. And some of those include mental health conditions, cancer, heart disease, stroke, type 2 diabetes, as well as high blood pressure. So exercise is one of the most powerful ways that we can improve your health. In addition, exercise has been shown to reduce the aging process. And that's, I think, something that we all want, that we want to feel youthful and continue to be so as we age. So ultimately what happens when we age, our bones become more brittle, disease and disability can occur, and ultimately cell death transpires. And research has shown that cell death and premature aging can be slowed down with exercise.
So do you think the public is generally aware of this?
To some extent, I do believe that we're aware that exercise does have positive effects on current health conditions. Maybe not so much to the fact that it can help to reduce the aging process, but there are countless things out there that tell us that with exercise or 150 minutes of exercise, we can help reduce things like heart disease, stroke, cardiac arrest, things like that.
So if someone comes in and they're saying, I want to reduce these risks, how do you go about assessing them and making sure that they have the proper training course?
Understanding their history is something that is of importance to me. I wouldn't want to put somebody who's never participated in any type of exercise through a program that I would put, say, somebody like myself who does train on average 4 to 5 days a week on the same program. That would just be negligence, and it would put them in a situation where they feel like they're not setting themselves up for success and that I'm not doing my job properly by putting them in a situation where they feel as though they're going to reach their goals. So knowing what type of history in exercise they have is important, and then assessing some of their health conditions, if they have any, because we wouldn't want to put somebody with hypertension, for example, through vigorous exercise on the first day. We want to make sure that that person in particular is well equipped for for the type of exercise that the limitations kind of hold them to. And then assessing things like BMI, which is body mass index. And for somebody who hasn't exercised, it would just be taking their body weight and measuring it up against their height to see if they're at risk for any type of diseases such as heart disease or stroke, things like that. So that would be something that I would start with to have a better understanding of where to go from there.
So in your time training clients, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
I think the clients that stand out the most to me are the ones who stay dedicated. And I think that just boils down to the fact that we live in a world where everything we want is so easy to come to. You know, we can click the button, click Google and find the answer to our question right away. And I think that because of that, we have this connotation that we can go into a gym, work out once, and we're going to see the results that we want. And when you don't, and that reality sets in, it can be detrimental to some people. So I think that there isn't really one success story, but those clients of mine who actually do ride out the program and that they understand that this is a lifestyle change, that this is a process and that it's not going to come instantly is something that speaks more volumes than somebody who's dropped 100 pounds, for example.
So if you could send any message to the public about why it's important to take your physical health seriously and the mental health impact it can have, what would you say?
I would say that being part of a community where other people are just as invested in their health and wellness is something that is very powerful. And if we can continue to try to push each other and encourage one another to be in a state where exercise and healthy eating is something that becomes the norm, it'll speak volumes. I would say just try it. More than anything, just get out there, try it. If something doesn't work, try something else. It doesn't mean that just because one thing is set for somebody or it means a lot to somebody doesn't mean that it might have the same effect for you. And I'll use myself as an example. I'm not somebody who likes to run. I'll try and I'll try again, but I found something else that I enjoy more that actually does have other health benefits. So running is great in one sense, but not for me. I prefer to go to the gym where I can see other people and their motivation to be at the gym helps to motivate myself. And that's just something that I've had to learn through the years.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem.
Stefani is absolutely right, my friends, about that sense of community. Truth is, if you're doing something in isolation, it tends to be harder on you from a mental standpoint. When it comes to something like exercising to reduce health risks, you can't just take it lightly, and you don't want to make it more difficult on yourself than it needs to be. You don't want to lose motivation that way. But if you're in an environment that you're comfortable, surrounded by people that you're comfortable with, all after the same thing, an improved quality of life, and it can be an enriching experience. You can learn from others, share a laugh, share a good time, even support each other as you grow stronger. This is something I've maintained about the disability community for many years, that we all are stronger, united in the idea that we can achieve our best. Now, it's also true in the able-bodied community. The fact is, we all just want to reach our goals. We might not have the same goal as the next guy. We might not get there the same way as the next guy. But keep searching, keep looking till you find what works for you. Stefania was exactly right. Something doesn't work, find something that does. Don't force yourself into somebody else's mold. Find your method and stick with it. Fact is, the person who's told they might never walk again can choose to live with that, or they can see what's possible. They can try to explore what their capabilities are. But it is mind over matter, my friends. It really is about what you believe. What your mind tells you you can do goes a long way. Fact is, the mind is what the universe and all life is about. And a motivated mind will find a way to encourage your body to keep on going. Now, it's very true also that training and exercise, it has to be what you're comfortable with. It has to be what you know you can do. Not everybody's going to get out there right away and bench press 280, but take it in small steps. Learn from others. Learn by doing. Take a chance. If you start off walking a meter every day, try to get to 2 meters the next day, and then 4, 8, go on from there. Before you know it, you're walking a very, very long path, but an enriching one. Some of the greatest stories I've heard, my friends, from people with acquired disabilities, people who have been injured in accidents, they tell me time and time again that it's not impossible for them. They tell me they thought their life was over until they tried something new, until they found that right adaptation, until they asked the questions. You can't just assume there's no way to get in shape. You can't just assume there's no hope for you to learn or grow as a person. Fact is, we all have potentials within us. But it's nobody else's place to dictate what those potentials are. It's not up to anyone to tell you that you're incapable, that you'll never amount to anything. It is up to you to say, this is where I want to be. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but it's the road I choose. And I think, from a personal standpoint, things like training can really, really make a lot of difference, because you're learning from somebody with experience, wisdom, and someone who will take the time to get to know and to understand where you are, where you want to be. Fact is, it's never, ever a shameful thing to ask for help. In fact, you can learn a great deal by observing others, by spending time with them, growing stronger, growing better. But it's just a waste if you're going to say, I have a disability, it doesn't matter if I'm in shape or not. You'd be amazed at the things that can happen. A person who wants to improve their physical health may find that a condition they've struggled with all their lives gets more and more manageable. The human body, my friends, is a connected series. Everything works together. And that is how it should be. All the pieces and exercise work together. All the people supporting one another work together. It's all a great tapestry. But you put it all together, it paints the way to the future. The question then becomes, how do you want to experience this future? Living to your fullest, or holding yourself back based on outdated precepts that people with disabilities can't accomplish? We're better than that as a people. Look beyond it. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.